Explorer. He was running low on fuel, so he decided, you know, not to wait on the gas line. He got a gas can, and he tried putting the gasoline into his vehicle with a gas can. There is a locking mechanism in there that would not even allow him to put fuel into his car. He ended up calling the dealer and says, you know, what's going on here? They say, oh, there's a special siphon under the spare tire you have to use to even put gasoline into the car with anything other than the gasoline pump nozzle. Back to you.
Okay, Don, I am, Steve, I am guessing that the gasoline pump nozzle does a physical push on an object that's spring-loaded, gets pushed out of the way. If I'm smart enough to crafty make a stiff piece of wire or something, why couldn't I push that thing out of the way while I'm trying to pour gasoline into the tank? And I know that there are people from time to time that run out of gas, and they go to a garage with a gas can, fill up the gas can, go back to the automobile. By one means or another, they manage to get the gas into the automobile and drive away. So if you can't even put gas into a car, that could be a real pain in the tail if you run out. Back to you, Steve. KC2MDB, K2LIW.
Yes, Dick, this is exactly what he tried to do. You know, he tried using a gas can, and apparently there's some sort of locking mechanism in there that locks the entire, the fuel tube, so you can't either siphon or you can't put gas into this thing. And according to the dealer, if you want to use a gas can, there's some sort of special funnel tube that they supply underneath the spare tire. He didn't find this out until later. So now he's got to take his car into the dealer and have this thing unlocked somehow. Back to you.
Yeah, there's something wrong here, Rusty, because he doesn't have to do an unlocking operation every time he goes to a gas station. I do know that back in the days when you could buy leaded fuel and unleaded fuel, they had two different diameters of the nozzle. The larger diameter was the leaded nozzle, the smaller diameter was the unleaded nozzle. And as such, it essentially stopped you from putting the wrong fuel into that automobile. Well, now there is essentially no unleaded fuel available anymore, but still you have that same mechanism that only the smaller diameter filler will go down to that baffle and push the little door out of the way, because the hole is just the right size for the smaller diameter filler of the unleaded fuel. So it looks to me like you've got to push that little lever out of the way, the thing that you see when you push the nozzle of the fuel pump into the filler. So to mechanically push that thing, which is only a couple of inches away from the outside of the automobile, it doesn't sound that difficult. To call that a locking mechanism is bothering me, because do you tell me you have to go through a unlocking procedure every time you go to a gas station with your boss's automobile? KC2MDP, K2LIW.
Yeah, Dick, it sounded awfully strange to me, and we were trying to figure it out, you know, and like I said to myself, something's got to be wrong. But he said he talked to the dealer, and he says there's actually some sort of mechanism in there that if you want to use a gas can, you're supposed to use this special funnel. Now, the only thing I could figure is maybe that, you know, when you push that little flapper, there must be something in there, and it must sense a certain diameter of the gas nozzle. That's the only thing I could come up with, and maybe something smaller causes this little thing to lock, to figure maybe you're trying to siphon gas out of the car rather than, you know, put gas into it. And I guess maybe that's the reason they give you this special funnel that you're supposed to use. Back to you.
Steve, do you know anything about that special funnel? I mean, if I took the kind of a funnel that's used for putting in power steering fluid, automatic transmission fluid, it's the kind of a tapered funnel that you use for putting in automatic tranny fluid. Would I be able to, and it's a graduated diameter thing, would I be stopped because the smaller diameter wouldn't go? I mean, next time I put gas in my car, I'm going to do a careful look at that little spring-loaded lever that gets pushed out of the way when you push in the nozzle. I'm having trouble believing that thing is so sophisticated that you have to have a very specific diameter of gas filler it's a little bit too large in diameter, it's not going to go into the hole. I accept that. But you're telling me if it's too small in diameter, somehow that the selective mechanism will not allow the little door to be pushed out of the way? That's pretty sophisticated. Over to you, Steve. KC2MDP, K2LIW.
Yeah, Dick, I haven't seen this funnel thing. This is the story I got from my boss. I haven't seen the funnel thing. And it sounded awfully crazy to me, too. But then again, I'm saying to myself, they have these cars today that do every other crazy thing in the world, you know. So why not some little feature in their gas tanks that won't allow you to either put gas in or take it out? Back to you.
One of the things that I've noticed is that when I try to fill the tank, and sometimes I'm withdrawing the nozzle at the same time, a little bit of the fuel is still coming out, I have the impression that there's enough of an aperture at that baffle mechanism that fuel will slowly go down. So that if I've got a gas can in my hand, and if I'm willing to spend some time to slowly pour in the fuel, I think I can get fuel in that tank. What do you think, Steve?
That's a good question, Dick. He said, you know, he used the gas can, and he said, you know, it was starting to go in, and then all of a sudden, you know, it just wouldn't take any more fuel. You know, it was just basically, you know, coming out the top of the tank. So I guess he tried a couple of times, said, hey, the fuel's not going into the car, and he gave up. You know, and that's when he called the dealer and says, you know, I can't even get fuel into my car. What's going on? And that's when they told him, oh, there's this little funnel get up you have to use that we provide for you, and it's under the spare in the trunk. And you know, he didn't realize it. You know, who would? And that's basically the story. It's hard to believe, but that's what he's telling me. Back to you.
Question.
Let me try this. Under the spare in the trunk, is there a special switch? First of all, I am positive there isn't a separate filler tube in the spare tire of the trunk. There'd be all kinds of dangers of that. I'm guessing there's some kind of a lever or mechanism or switch that you have to flip under the spare tire. Is that possible, Steve? KC2MDP, K2LIW?
Now, the way he made it sound, Dick, is it's like a funnel. It must be like a funnel with a certain tube or something, and you basically, you know, you pull out from under the spare tire, you slide that into the gas fill, and then you can use your gas can. That's what he made it sound like. Like I said, I haven't seen this thing. You know, when we get a few minutes, and he's, you know, got a couple of spare minutes, so I'm gonna tell him, you know, dig this thing out of there, because I want to see what this thing looks like, too, because I'm curious.
NAPG in a second. I see another problem now. If you're using a funnel in the spare tire chamber of the trunk, and everybody putting in fuel does a little bit of spilling. To do some spilling on the outside of the car in the normal place, no sweat. If I'm spilling fuel into the spare tire cavity of the automobile, and then I close the trunk and that makes fumes, you've got an explosive atmosphere in there. This sounds like a very dangerous design. Over to you first, Steve. K2LIW.
No, Dick. What he's telling me is it's basically in under the spare tire. And in other words, you know, you do what you got to do. You loosen your spare tire, you lift it up, and basically there's this mechanical device. It's just a funnel with, I guess, some sort of spout on it. And you physically take, you know, that funnel out from under the spare tire, and then you slide that into where you'd normally put the fuel in your car, and then you can use your gas can.
Wow. What percentage of the automobiles do you think have a special funnel-like device hidden under the spare tire in the trunk of the car? How many automobiles have that? That's a new one on me. Back to you, Steve.
That I couldn't tell you. All I know is I wouldn't want a car with that, that's for sure. You know, like I said, this is, you know, he leases this car for his business. It's brand new, so it's either a 2012 or a 2013 Ford Explorer. And, that's what the guy at the dealer told him.
Oh, amazing. We got Wes and Dave in that order with some further questions. Wes, go ahead with your question. K2LIW.
When you were explaining
increased efficiency of the transmitter. Kind of odd and quite, I'd have said it's quite opposite. Maybe it's just the matter of the explanation. Enter it here.
I never use the word efficiency. If you normally have a radar that transmits a 1 microsecond pulse, and the pulse is on the same frequency, and you're using a receiver that is 1 megacycle wide, that works like a charm. If I now have the ability to transmit a pulse that is not 1 microsecond long, but 10 microseconds long, the total amount of energy I'm transmitting is 10 times higher, because it's 10 times longer. Even though the exact power output and efficiency during the pulse is the same. And now because you've got this fancy chirp to the pulse, and because you're using this fancy filter, which has different amounts of time delay in the filter versus frequency, it takes a 10 microsecond long pulse, squeezes it down to a 0.1 microsecond pulse, a 100 to 1, or it's a 100 to 1 squeeze ratio in my example. The pulse that comes out now is 1/100th as long, 1/100th higher, 100 times higher. It's 100 times higher in peak envelope power apparent coming out of the receiver filter. No change in efficiency here. We're just taking the same amount of energy, using it in a different way, as long as you can make this very fancy filter. But we'll go back to that subject in a minute. Let's go back to this gasoline thing, which is the primary one here now. Dave, N2APG, tell us about putting gas into automobiles. If you happen to know, you got it, Dave, K2LIW.
Yeah, hi, Dave. N2APG, hope you're well and warm tonight. I just had a couple of comments. You think about the putting the gas in the car, the siphon tube underneath the spare tire and stuff like that. I'm 150% positive that that's all explained in that particular vehicle's owner's manual. Of course, none of us have it, but I'm sure it came with the car, and that's why you have to read those things. Explains all that. And I live across the street from a gas station, so I've had a bird's eye view of some interesting behavior, going on at the gas station for the last week. And one particular story that I'd like to tell you real quick is about his gas supply.
Interesting stuff. Please proceed.
Well, it's a Sunoco station. He normally gets his delivery from Sunoco. The truck comes in and it says Sunoco on it, of course. So after the storm hit, he got a delivery with, Sunoco truck. And of course that gas lasted, a day or two, and then he was out of gas. He has power, electrical power throughout the whole event. So he's been in good shape. He's been able to sell gas. But when he ran out of gas, he contacted Sunoco and said, okay, I'm all set. Send me another truck. And they told him, well, we're sorry, but we don't have a truck to send you. We just can't get the gas to you. So what he did was he actually purchased gas from another supplier in the state of North Carolina, and they had two tanker trucks deliver the gas to him. And I saw both of them pull in. Let me drop it. And, of course, when these two tanker trucks pulled into the gas station, they didn't say Sunoco on it. They said ACE, A-C-E. And I had never seen that before, and I was kind of confused. There were two trucks, one behind the other, delivering gas. And I looked at the license plates, and sure enough, the license plates said North Carolina. So that was like 2 days ago. So today, when I had a chance, I went over to the gas station, and I spoke to the owner, and I asked him nicely, what was all that about? What are these ACE tanker trucks? And he explained to me that Sunoco couldn't provide him the gas. He bought the gas from North Carolina, had it shipped up here. So he not only did he have to pay for the gas, he had to pay taxes in New York, taxes in North Carolina, and the cost of transportation of the gas up here. So needless to say, the price is a little high right now. It's $4.79 per gallon, which I thought was price gouging. But when he explained to me the circumstance, it kind of made sense.
Yeah, isn't it that when you export, you don't have to pay the taxes?
I wonder about that, but when you and I run low enough on fuel, whether or not we get it for $3.95 or $4.75 a gallon is a minor factor. I'm willing to pay the extra price in order to be able to drive my automobile if I've got to get to work in the morning with that automobile. So if he really paid extra, and now I've got to pay him extra, that doesn't strike me as gouging. I'm with you. As long as the customer knows what's going on, and the customer ahead of time is seeing the price on his sign, you know what you're going to pay while you're on that line. It's no surprise. He can scream and holler and say, this is gouging, but maybe it isn't. And so what do you think? Is there a way that, as Wes is saying, Dave, is it possible that he doesn't have to pay both state taxes in this circumstance, particularly not the federal taxes in two places at once? N2APG, KQLIW.
Oh, I have no idea. I couldn't make any kind of comment on that. I'm just telling you what he told me. That's what he told me. He had to pay for the gas, the transportation costs, to get it up here from North Carolina, and taxes in both North Carolina and New York. So that's what he related to me. But his company, Sunoco, they didn't really want him to, go out and purchase gas on his own. He really didn't have their approval, so to speak. They frowned upon that. But, I think he did the right thing. He has power. He has the ability to pump the product. He just couldn't get the product. So he went out and got the product on his own. Needless to say, there's been, lines, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cars long, all day long, getting fuel. And hopefully these are people that need it, a lot of people with cans, for generators, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you think by way of the social networking people are finding out about that particular Sunoco station near you, Dave, a couple of doors down from your house? They're finding out that the guy's got gas, and with these two ACE trucks from North Carolina, has that started to run out? I think you said that was a couple of days ago when it was delivered. Do you think he's getting to the bottom of that supply? Over to you, Dave, K2RIW.
This is N2APG. Well, he's got a capacity of 20,000 gallons. That's his capacity, the tanks in the ground. Each tanker truck is approximately 10,000 gallons, and he had two of them deliver. This was this morning. He had two of them delivered this morning. So he's got more coming. Apparently he's got more coming. Interesting you mentioned that, the supply and things like that. I've been doing a lot of research online. Apparently, as you can imagine, there's a lot of panic and anxiety and hoarding going on as far as the gasoline. There's a lot of psychological factors that are amounting to big lines. Not everybody that's on that line needs the gas. They want the gas. They fear that they're not going to be able to get it in the future, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a major psychological factor in there. If you took all those panic people out of that line and just would be able to sell gas to those people that need it for generators to keep their home warm, the line would probably be cut in half, in my opinion.
N1GFP.
N1GFP recognized. 20,000 gallons, assuming that each person gets somewhere between 10 and 15 gallons if they really had an empty automobile, would 20,000 gallons would give him around 1,500 cars he can fill. At 5 minutes per car, if I did that right, 5 minutes per car, 1,500, that's a guess on my part, that's a total of that number of minutes, which is, that's crazy. Let's see, 5 minutes per car, 1,500 cars, okay, that's 7,500 minutes, divided by 60, 125 hours. So for 125 hours of continuous operation, if there's only one car, if the line is only, if he's only using one pump at a time, he can be filling automobiles for around 125 hours. If he's running three pumps at a time, in a very efficient operation, then he can fill automobiles for 41 hours.
He has six pumps.
Okay. So let's go back one step here. Alrighty. 125 hours, six pumps. He continuously filled cars for 20 hours. Ah. Did I do that right? Let's undo that one. 125 hours total and six pumps, yes. So in theory, he can be out in about one day. Is that approximately what you saw, Dave? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, let's factor in that each car, you know, again, they're not just filling up their car tank. They have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 gallon cans in their trunk. So multiply, you know, put that in the equation as well.
Yeah, it's amazing how much of that fluid we're using. N1 GFD, it sounds like November 1 Golf Foxtrot David, if I got it right. Please correct me and tell us your name and then your information, sir. KQRIW, my name is Dick.
Well, Dick, it's Rob over here in Greenwich, Connecticut. Formerly KB1 GFD, now it's November 1 Golf Foxtrot Papa, stands for Glenville Fire Police over here in Greenwich, Connecticut. 20,000 gallons in the station's tanks. He's not running 20,000 gallons out of that tank completely. No station runs his tanks out. There's quite a bit of tank fuel in that tank before he'll shut that gas station down. And if they tell you that, it's nothing. They still have quite a bit of tank. They have no gas station runs it dry or down too low. They have a minimum of what they'll shut off. And I'm not going to tell you what that is, but we are here in Greenwich, Connecticut. We are feeling the effect of over the state lines. Personally, I welcome you all. They're in a situation that not everybody's in. And in quite a few situations up here in Connecticut there, we have state troopers at every gas station now. Full law enforcement shown. They're not playing no games here. And I've had people, residents here in Greenwich here, upset and everything, and I said to them, just wait a minute. There are people that have no gas. You have gas 5 minutes down the street from you. You have to stand in line, but they're traveling 60 to 100 miles away to get gas. Just everybody take a deep breath, you know, and help out. So, yeah, so we're feeling it on this end in Greenwich here. So, but I welcome everybody because I'm in a better situation than some people that don't have nothing, lost their homes and everything. So it's an unfortunate thing there, but nobody's running 20,000 gallons out of their tank there. We had a situation, let me drop it for a second. We've had people coming up to gas stations. I'm on the fire department, so I'm dealing with all this here, not only the hurricane there. But we've had people come up with milk containers. No way. They're not filling them up. It's a danger not only to themselves, to everybody else on the highway that they're transporting. We've had people try to fill it up in coolers that you put your beer in. Fairfield, Connecticut, had a guy with 250-gallon drums in the back of his truck. Fire department showed up, says, no way. You can't transport that in there. It's not a marked container. It's against DOT regulations. You're going across state lines. It's illegal. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I've seen somebody try to actually get on the public bus with 15 gallons of gasoline. I've seen people fill gasoline containers in the back of their cars with their children in it. 30, 40 gallons of thing there. It's getting really crazy, and it's getting real dangerous. So everybody has to just take a step back, think about it, help each other out. That's all I have to say, Jack. N1 GFD.
It sounded like you said GFE, Golf Foxtrot Echo, and earlier it sounded like Golf Foxtrot David. If it's a Greenwich Fire Department, it's probably Foxtrot David. I am guessing you don't drain the 20,000-gallon tank all the way to the bottom for a couple of reasons, but one of those reasons could be the actual pump itself is a submerged object, and the fuel around that pump is the cooling mechanism for the pump. that if you really drain the pump, all the way, drain the tank all the way, the pump is going to run dry, do some damage internally to its diaphragm mechanisms or whatever, and run extra heat. Am I even close on these guesses, Rob? N1 Golf Foxtrot David? T2RIW. My name is Dick.
Yeah, Dick. It's Golf Foxtrot Papa. P as in Papa. GFP there. Dick, we've known you for some time there. We don't get up here much here, but you've helped us out in quite a bit of situations and technical things. We can listen to the net. Not on there too much there. There's a lot of reasons. You're catching sludge off the bottom of the tank there and stuff like that. It's just not a good policy. No station runs its tanks dry. I mean, if he gets 15,000 gallons, he's going to have five of it in the tank left there and shutting down. And all our stations right now, when a tanker comes in, there are law enforcement present. When they're closing down, there's law enforcement present there. So it's, you know, an unfortunate situation that something like this has happened. But I got to say that I can't say a percentage is because, you know, I deal with this all the time. A lot of people really didn't prepare for a lot of this. I mean, and day four was a meltdown around here. And, you know, they predicted this. They always said day four, any kind of catastrophe or anything like that, it's going to be a meltdown. People aren't preparing for this. People listen to the news. Let me drop it again. Listen to the news and the weatherman, and how many times the weatherman has been wrong. So, it's not going to happen again. Oh, it's not going to happen this time. They wait till the last minute. So, it's, I hope it's a wake-up call for a lot of people to say, okay, if the weatherman says this could happen, be prepared for it there. You know, at least with food, certain things, if you got to get extra gas for a generator. And we go to a million calls. Let me tell you, the whole generator, jumping, everybody jumping on it, is probably one of the worst things for us first responders. How many carbon monoxide poisonings we go to, starting fires. Let me drop it again. And we lost five houses here, structure fires here in Greenwich here, since the storm. And one was just yesterday from a woman running a halogen lamp on a tripod, the lighter downstairs there. One of her animals kicked it over, fell onto a piece of furniture. She doesn't have a house right now. So people got to take real precaution. You think you're buying a generator to save your food, to heat your house. There's a lot of steps and a lot of precautions people have to take with all this stuff there. A thing that you think is saving your life can take your life. So, now, I could stay on this subject all night long, Dick. But we're not going to. N1 GFP, back to you, Dick.
It's T-Mobile.
I heard something Mobile, but it dropped out a few times. Rob, after Hurricane Gloria, I was heading up an operation at Airborne Instruments Laboratory where we purchased 525 individual 4-kilowatt generators for the employees. And I was publishing something every week called the Generator News, in which I'm telling them absolutely positively never put a generator inside of your house. I don't care what the exhaust system is made out of. Because the generator has continuous vibration, you're going to get metal fatigue of the exhaust pipe that goes outside the house, and you're going to be putting fumes in the house, and you're going to be putting gasoline in the house. Two very bad operations. You probably have heard that at least five people in this incident of this hurricane have died from carbon monoxide poisoning because of the fumes of a generator getting into the house, either through an open window upwind or running it in the garage. And sometimes with the garage closed because people are afraid of somebody trying to steal the generator. And hooking up the generator itself, there's a zillion ways that could be done wrong. But just the generator itself should be run in the backyard, certainly not in the house. And a smart person getting ready for this event would be filling up his automobiles. But then when it comes to filling up gas cans that are properly marked as gasoline, these red cans, how many of those can you safely transport in a car? how many of them can you safely transport anywhere near your house, your garage, the outer shed, or whatever. There's a hell of a lot of things to worry about here. Give us a couple more words on this one, Rob. You're on a good subject. N1GFP, K2LIW in the TechNet.
N1GFP. Now, a few years back, it was about 2007, we had a big storm there, and kept asking where an individual was, and I hadn't seen him around, and nobody would say nothing. He's out, he's fine. Well, come to find out that he actually did what you talked about, running a generator in his basement with a makeshift exhaust system, thinking it was safe. Had not his wife came home at the time to pull them both out, all three of them, him and his two children would not be here. And if you see the scars on his arms there, that they had to cut him up there, because there's a procedure there for poisoning, he wouldn't be talking to us. And a couple of people had known what happened and went to the hospital, and they said, kept saying, Rob's asking about it. His very words was, do not tell him what happened. He was so embarrassed because the line of work I'm in, he did not want me to let me know. And that's exactly what we did. Makeshift exhaust. Let me drop it again. Generex generators. A lot of people I got into them. Within compliance of the distance from the house, yada, yada, yada. And everything isn't, as I would say, it could be written in a book, but it's not always guaranteed what is written will always work. We've had incidents that we've gone to people's house for carbon monoxide things going off. They had a Generex generator. But humidity, rain, the wind was blowing in the direction of the house, off the exhaust, getting into the air conditioner, into the house there. Kerosene heaters. I don't know if you remember, Dick, back then, the kerosene heaters, Kerosons was very popular. And I'll drop it again. Those became very popular. In Sonia, Connecticut, a woman actually blew up her entire house and burnt her house down because she accidentally grabbed the gasoline can and not the kerosene can, not knowing it. Honest mistake, but a costly mistake. Fortunately, she didn't die in it. Now, that's why it's a state law, and I think a federal law, DOT, fuel, OSHA, whatever, that all kerosene cans have to be marked in blue and marked kerosene, separating from gasoline and kerosene. Yes, Dick, you talked about the amount of gasoline, DOT, OSHA, transportation, state lines, yeah. There's rules about that, too. But the kerosene heaters use oxygen. You have to keep a vented window. They tell people not to run your gas stove to keep heat in it. Basically, what they're saying is you can do it, but it's risky. Let's drop again. What your gas stove is doing is an open flame. It's burning up oxygen. You die from lack of oxygen. Not so much carbon monoxide, but, it's using up the air in your house there. So that's why they're not asking. I've done it before in pinches there, but with proper ventilation. But people have to read the labels, not just going off with, I say, half-cocked. I probably had more people in Home Depot scratching their head going, I'd rather freeze to death. So take caution, everyone. Understand what you're doing, what you're getting involved in. It's something that, yes, it could be a lifesaver, but it can be taking your life also. N1GFP, over to you, Dick.
These great big red containers you can get from Home Depot and Lowe's, which are made for transporting gasoline, I think they're 4 gallons, 8 gallons. I think they're 8 gallons. If a person showed up at a garage with three of those and he's about to put them into the trunk of his car and then go across state line, my goodness, does that sound... If he gets into an accident, wow. Even one can in the car, if he gets into an accident, it could very easily be game over. So, is it legal to even... my guess is they relax the laws a little bit during this particular terrible incident that we've all gone through. But I'm having trouble believing that you can... that DOT would really smile on you, even with one 8-gallon properly marked red container of gasoline in the trunk of a car going across the state line. Give us a couple of words on that one, Rob. Enter GFP, K2LIW.
That's a real hard one. I don't know exactly what the Department of Transportation regulations is, OSHA, whatever, there. Now, is a gasoline container properly sealed, you know, bouncing around, temperature, building up pressure, and I'm sure any one of you who's going out to your garage in the summertime and your gasoline can is just, like, bulging, like it ate at Taco Bell's. That's the only way I explain it. You know, it needs a Gas-X. And, there is, I don't know what they're going to do, what they're going to penalize people if they can enforce that. Yeah, basically, you get an accident, get rear-ended, roll over, you know. I'm sure a lot of you have gone to go fill up your propane tank, and you probably tried to open it up, and it won't spill out the gas. You test it, because it is a new valve in there, and maybe some of you remember when you used to get propane, there used to be a plug in it, because you used to be able to open that valve. Well, friends of my parents had lost their life at a simple propane tank that they went to go fill up their barbecue grill. They stuck it in the back of the station wagon. Well, it rolled and something caused a spark because the valve opened up, spewing gas out. A lot of people say 25 pounds. That's not a lot. 25 pounds of fuel under pressure, or even 25 pounds of a tire under pressure, is deadly. And I want to remind people that since we're talking under pressure, since we're all ham radio operators, if any of you are involved in antenna launchers, there's pressure. So be aware of what you're buying and what you're using, and anything in pressure. It's common sense, Dick, and I'm sorry to say I'm not categorizing or pointing the finger at anybody. People don't use common sense anymore. And that's why we're responding to the stuff there. And just basically saying, be careful. You're transporting that much gasoline, you know, you're asking for trouble. But I can understand their situation too. They're desperate. No heat, no fuel to run your car to get to work, if you can get to work. So what I'm just saying is, be careful. Think what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, ask. Read the manual. And when GFP over your deck.
Because I was involved in that operation right after Hurricane Gloria in 1985, of buying 500 and some odd 4-kilowatt generators and distributing them to the employees, and I'm writing these weekly generator news reports in which I'm telling people what not to do and how to use the generator properly. It was a triple fuel generator. It was run on liquid propane, natural gas, or gasoline, and had an electric start, 4 kilowatts. It put out 110 to 20, and it would charge a 12-volt battery. And as I said, it had an electric start. Very nice generator for $525, because we bought them in such bulk. And two great big tractor trailer trucks of these generators got delivered to Long Island after Hurricane Gloria. But I was telling these people, do not put that generator inside the garage, inside the house. It is an outside backyard thing, a good number of feet from the house. A ridiculous number of people wanted to make an installation in the house with some kind of a flexible metal exhaust system. I told them, no way in hell that the continuous vibration of that machine is eventually going to cause fatigue of the bellows of that metal exhaust system. The exhaust system is going to rust through. One way or another, you're going to be putting carbon monoxide in the house, and that's lethal. Second of all, gasoline in the house. Bad news. I may have exaggerated a little bit, but I tried to tell them that one cup of gasoline spilled onto a concrete floor, then allowed to evaporate, and a spark hits that vapor. I believe one cup of gasoline so exploded, I think will lift the roof off the house. What's your guess on that one, Rob? N1GFP, you don't have to wait till the machine drops, just wait for the four beeps. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Nah, I don't know if that's going to be that much of an explosive there on the flash point there. And a lot of times gasoline is pretty much hard to ignite there once it's soaked into a thing there. It's got a high flash point, but once it soaks in there, you know, sometimes it's a little, you know, but if it's something close to it, more, it's got more of a fuel source there. Well, we got this, there's a triangle thing there. And there's, you know, fuel, oxygen, and material there. If you cut any three of those off there, you don't have a fire there. But you're right, Jack. It was ludicrous for them to even think that they can get on there. And I remember Gloria. Fortunately, I was in Canada at the time there, at a wedding there. We felt the effects of it, but we were gone there. But now it's just, you know, I can't stress enough there, you know, the government, the local authorities have to get involved into this. More education on it there. I don't know, because as far as I can see, that this is the weather we're going to see from now on. The Earth is going through a cycle, and we're going to see more and more severe weather like this. So we have to be prepared, ready for it, not only you know, as a civilian, local authorities, the government, everybody. It's just, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to have to take care for it there. Dick, and you're probably old enough to remember, my parents had flashlight batteries, had flashlights all the time, had enough food. Well, what it is people got so convenient there to go out to McDonald's, to go out to get something to eat. When I grew up, we had a storm, you're having Campbell's tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich, and we were ecstatic. That was like the greatest thing on earth. Oh, great. We were happy. Sat around the table with a kerosene lantern there, playing board games, you know, staying home. This last storm, I come out, and out an hour after everything else, people are jogging, running. I stopped the guy. I said, you know, stuff is still coming out. Oh, I needed a breath of fresh air. Well, you need a tree branch in the head. I said, do we still have live wire? People need to stay home after a storm. You know, I know it's hard. Your iPod, your iPad, your computer's down. Find something else to do. Stay home. Let us finish doing our work there, because if you don't, we're going to be coming out to get you there. Carbon monoxide detectors, make sure they're working. Make sure you got plenty of batteries. If your power goes out, make sure you got batteries to put it in there to back it up. Dick, I don't know what else to say. Like I said, this can be a tire seminar for 8 hours, 7 days. Over to you, N1GFP.
And it's useful information, even though you may be afraid that it's a little bit too negative, Rob, it's definitely useful information, because a significant number of electrical engineer, ham radio type people now own generators, obvious by those ridiculously long lines of people with red cans in their hands that we all saw on the news. There's a lot of generators out there, and there's a large number of ways that a generator can be misused. I suspect that a high percentage of the people ran a simple extension cord over to the refrigerator from the generator, and that's a reasonably safe operation, and maybe they added another extension cord to that, daisy chained them, and ran the television set and a couple of lights. That's sort of understandable. I always backfeed my house, and I know it is dangerous to pull the main circuit breaker between you and Connecticut Power and Light or Long Island Lighting Company or LIPA or Con Ed, to pull the main circuit breaker, to disconnect it, and then to power your whole house with the generator by backfeeding. It gives you a lot of convenience, but you gotta be on a careful side there. If the particular line, the drop between the pole transformer and your house, is the thing that became disconnected, and you didn't pull the main circuit breaker, and now you've backfed the whole house, and that line becomes live during the time that a lineman is doing a repair, obviously he's at risk. I'd like to believe that a smart line repair person, power repair person, is going to hear the sound of the generator in the backyard and know to take extra precaution, to consider every one of the wires live, even though he thinks the lines from his distribution system are dead. So Another thing that people do, let me drop. Quite a few people are super conservative, they think, and they went and bought own big numbers like 8 and 10 and 15 kilowatt generators to power their house. In my opinion, that's very unnecessary. You don't have to live in the laps of luxury just because there's a power outage. You can do a little bit of Spartan living. In other words, as long as you've got the furnace running so the house has got heat, the refrigerator running so you're not spoiling your food, a television set and a couple of lights, that's all you really need. The first generator I owned was only 1,500 watts. I ran my whole house on 1,500 watts. Furnace, television set, refrigerator, but I had to play power czar. I had to make sure that the right thing went on at the right time, because if everything went out of stop at once, it's not a disaster. The generator just stalled. Or some guys have got a circuit breaker, and the circuit breaker will reset itself. So it's not a disaster if you draw too much. But the advantage of a 1,500 or a 2,000 or a 3,000 watt generator is that when you're lightly loaded, when you're not running the refrigerator and the furnace, the amount of fuel it consumes is a hell of a lot smaller. When you're idling a 13 kilowatt generator and only using 2 kilowatts of it, you're consuming the fuel quite a bit faster, and therefore that can of gas you've got is going to run out sooner, and you're going to be on that long line again. So overdoing it is expensive, and you don't need that much luxury, because we only use a generator like this once per 5 years, so to speak. So it doesn't have to be that luxurious. That's an opinion. Not everyone's going to agree with that. I'm going to turn that one back to you also, Rob, for some comments on this one. N1GFP. Thank you for checking in, Rob. Haven't heard from you in a while. K2LAW.
N1GFP. Thank you, Dick. You're right. That's overkill on those generators. I'm running 6,500. I can run my radio I'm talking onto. I can run the 480HX there at 200 watts. And I can run the Johnson Viking Ranger with the NC3 National 300, plus the computer here, my furnace, one refrigerator upstairs, and the beer refrigerator's got to stay off. So we got to get either a bag of ice or sneak some beers up into the freezer up there when the other half's not looking. We have home theater system. It works. But a lot of that stuff draws low amps. The furnace doesn't draw a lot of, a lot of amps. The refrigerator really kicks up a little bit, but actually your microwave really kicks that generator in, so I only use it for like a minute and a minute and a half, low use on it. You can hear that generator kick in. But, you know, the bathroom lights, we have a gas stove, which I said to the other half, she wanted electric, I said, no, gas, it is propane. Because if we have a fire up the house for any, up the street there for any reason, or any structure fires, they're going to turn the gas off. They may not turn it off directly here. You know, a lot of times we don't like turning off the main gas because now we got to find every house that's got a pilot light, because once we open that up there, and everybody's pilot light's out, we're pouring gas into their house there. So we'll try to turn it off at the source at the house there. But I said, yeah, you got a rupture in the line. I said, propane. We looked at the Generex, 500-pound gas propane tank. We had to buy a little bit of wetlands. It was going to cost us more to install it than the actual unit was. We went portable. Our electrician, I put a transfer panel in here, which I suggest everybody does. A portable generator and our transfer panel there didn't cost us less than $3,000. I get a lot of people go, oh, it costs a lot of money. Stop buying the beer, stop buying the cigarettes, buy a generator. He wanted to actually say, okay, here's the cord that comes with it. Run it through the open window here and outside. I said, Angelo, there's going to be no open windows in the backside of his house when his generator's running. I want a box on the outside with the heavy-duty plug, hardwire right to the box there, because I go out, my son goes out, we're out of the house, responding to calls, the other half's here alone. I want it simple. I don't want any open windows. And a lot of people got to understand that. You know, the generator's got to be a certain amount of feet. I actually got an old Dayton, it's a Patterson heavy-duty steel fan. that. I actually plug into that generator because I got a little overhang in the porch there. And I plug that in there, and I put that on the high, and I aim that right at the generator, which is keeping the motor a little bit cooler, but shooting the exhaust, the carbon monoxide exhaust, a little early. Suncrest makes a garbage can holder, and there's a company that makes a conversion kit, which is like $300-some-odd, that you can actually put your generator in with a ventilator and everything and seal it away from your house in the pouring rain and pouring snow. So there's a lot of options people have to look at. If you're going to be cheap, you're going to be dead. N1GFC.
Yeah, you brought to our attention some interesting information here. The right way to do it is with a transfer switch, and the switch can either be toward your normal power company, so to speak, toward Connecticut Power or toward Con Ed in one direction, and the other direction is toward the generator. Because it is a single pole, double throw switch, you can't make the mistake of powering both things simultaneously. And it's a lot safer for linemen and a lot safer for you. And to have a separate heavy-duty plug on the outside of the house with no window on that side and the generator in the backyard, smart idea. And that fan blowing the exhaust fumes away from the house, another very smart idea. Very few people do any of that, as you know, Rob. That's kind of a little bit sad. There's lots of ways you can go wrong with the generator. And so five people already died that we know of by way of carbon monoxide poisoning of a generator. And I suspect garage operations are probably part of it. You don't want to run that thing in the garage. And these gas heaters, because they use oxygen and give off, even if it's carbon dioxide, they're consuming the oxygen in the air, and it's not safe. And we all should have carbon monoxide detectors. And with any further questions or comments on generators and gasoline, give me a call at us right now, K2RIW in the TechNet.
LD1.
WGV with a quick comment.
Don and John in that order. And Don, either the machine was slow to pick up or you were fast on talking and slow to push the button. I only heard the DY, but I figured out who you were. Go right ahead, Don. N2LDY. Push the button, wait a second, then talk. K2RIW.
Oh, excuse me. Well, you know what it is, though? The guy coming through the Selvus machine, and there's a delay there, which doesn't help my situation. My question and for you was that you were talking about back meters. So, let's say you make up this cable, and turn your main breaker off, and now you're back feeding into the panel, right? Through what? Are you going to a couple of breakers? Let's say you pick a 220 breaker, the 30 amp breaker for the stove or something, or the dryer. You take the two wires out, you feed back through that set of circuit breakers. How does that affect the circuit breakers when you're running the current the wrong way through that circuit breaker? Dick, maybe you can clarify that for me.
You put your finger on a couple of very critical items, Don. Lucky for me, I've got a 1957 house which has old-fashioned fuses, and you can power a fuse backwards, no problem. And I've asked the question of a number of experts on normal circuit breakers. If you feed them in the reverse direction, do you still have protection? And I get very mixed answers depending on brand name and depending on conditions. So a circuit breaker fed backwards probably is not safe. However, the main reason a circuit breaker is there is because Con Ed, Connecticut Power and Light, New Jersey Power and Light, Long Island Power Authority, either of these sources of commercial power for the domestic application are capable of a zillion amperes. You get a short circuit in that wiring, and a zillion amperes can flow, and the circuit breaker is in the normal condition going to limit that. When you're operating from a finite power generator, in my case, it used to be a 1,500-watt generator, nowadays is the 4,000 watt generator. That 4,000 watt generator only has a certain number of amperes it can deliver, and you try to draw more amperes than that, and the generator simply stalls. You're putting more torque on the motor than it can tolerate, and the thing stops running. Or in my case, it has the circuit breaker on the generator itself. That circuit breaker on the generator gives you the protection. Let me drop. Now, the right way to do it would be to make up a special cable that goes from the appropriate position in your main fuse panel into the transfer relay, transfer switch, which is a 220 transfer switch, 220 volt transfer switch. And back in the day when I was selling those generators, that was a $220 item. Nowadays, it's probably a $400 item, that transfer switch. So to do it correctly is going to be expensive. And to get it really, the whole installation done by a person qualified to do it, there's a great big labor charge and so on. I'm just talking about the price of the part. What I do, and I'm not recommending this, I'm just telling you what I've done, and it works for me. But you got to be careful. There is a ordinary 110-volt socket on the back side of my house, on the outside of the house. I've made up a kind of a jumper cable that goes from the generator to that socket, and I backfeed that 15-ampere socket. That 15 amperes that goes back into, let's call it phase A of my house, and that would be feeding half the house, and phase B wouldn't be fed. As long as I'm sure that I pulled the main fuse, in my case, the cartridge fuse, so that both the black and the red wire between me and LIPA, Long Island Power Authority, are thoroughly disconnected, I then put a jumper between the black wire and the red wire so that the one circuit on the outside of my house with only 110 volts feeds both sides of the house. Because I've got a rather small power generator, I'm backfeeding the whole system, I don't have circuit breakers, and now the whole house is powered, and I have to play power czar. I have to make sure that when the furnace is on, the refrigerator is not running and so on. You don't want everything starting at once. You'll stall the generator. It's not a disaster. It's just a pain in the tail to go out there and restart the generator. So that system for me works. But there's a hell of a lot of people that are not smart enough, and they can easily electrocute themselves doing what I just described.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
GFP for a quick.
Go ahead, GFE. GFP, I guess it is. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, Dick. Hello, John. Don't do what Dick does. Don't play games. Don't look for shortcuts. Put the transfer panel in there. Get the proper generator. Get it properly wired. Don't play games. Shortcuts are for short lives. And just the last, when the other half left here, every day that she turns the generator on, because we would only run it while we were here. It wasn't too cold at nighttime. At the appearance of time to leave the generator on for the furnace, we would shut it at night there and give her respect for other people there that would hear it there. And I mentioned to her, when you turn it off, leave the panel, the transfer panel, the way it is. Leave it in line with the generator. Because when the power companies power up, sometimes when it powers up, it kicks off, kicks on. Sometimes it's a surge through everything in here. So when I got home at 3:30, we had power. Nothing was powered up that we normally powered. I flip on the burner first, let it fire up, flip on the refrigerator, and put everything back in line there, slowly. We've been to quite a few structure fires when power is powered up. As soon as we say power up, we're going to carbon monoxide, alarms, and everything. So, Dick knows what he's doing. I suggest to everybody, do not try what Dick's doing. Don't even attempt it. Get a license, electrician, put your transfer panel in there, get the proper wiring for your generator. Don't do shortcuts. I guess I'll just pass it over to John. John's got something to say. N1GFE, over to you, John.
I have it, Dick.
You've got it, John. Rob gave it to you. You've got the it. Go ahead, John.
Well, it depends on what it is. Okay, I think you're right, Dick, about that cup of gasoline, if properly evaporated and atomized in the air. You're probably right about that explosive force, because we were told that 1 gallon of gasoline